joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Jason, WF2N, will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. We also offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange colored type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type puzzle.kc2rc.com into your browser and you'll go directly to the page. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Jason, WF2N, will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for any future topics of interest, please let us know either here or use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Jason, WF2N. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening, and good evening to everybody listening.
Perhaps Jason is having a little problems with his coax cable. He had that problem the last technical net. So hopefully he'll fix it and be back here and join us. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net that meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. If you have any questions or any topics that you want to have discussed, please give me your first name and your call sign.
This is WF2N. Jason, Roy, are you reading me?
Unfortunately, you're not really capturing the repeater. I heard about a fraction of a second of audio, and then the connection just went away.
To NVB with a comment.
Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy. This should be the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. And if anyone is out there and anyone have a question or a comment or a topic for discussion tonight, please feel free, hit that push to talk button and give me your first name and your call sign.
This is WF2N. Roy, are you reading me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Thanks. I don't know what the issue is here, but I did respond, but I guess maybe I'm still having some issues. I did hear another station also try to check in with a comment, Roy. I'm not sure if you heard him. I didn't catch the call sign either, so maybe you could try again.
Hey, thank you, Jason. Maybe the repeater is just a little deaf these days. I don't know. I'll let it lie quietly, and if anyone out there wants to check in with their name and their call sign, please do so, and Jason, listen closely, and I'll try and listen closely, and hopefully we'll be able to recognize them.
KD2NVB, Roy or Jason, do you hear me?
Bob.
There's something weird with the repeater. Peter, because Jason, I heard Jason every time he came back to you, but you didn't hear him. But then the last time you did hear him. And I also had a problem with the net last night. I started low power, and he said I was scratchy. He did hear me. And I even turned up to fairly high power, and he still said I was scratchy, which is really unusual. So anyway, just throwing that out there. And by the way, I do have a question, but if someone else can go first, because I'm cooking my dinner. I need about 10 minutes, but if I have to and no one else has a question, I'll go. Back to you, Roy. Back to the net.
Hey, very good, Bob. I don't know. Signal is a little bit wonky tonight. I had to turn the squelch cutoff all the way down. Everyone sounds rather noisy. Sometimes that happens with the repeater, and as the technical net goes on, it clears up for some strange reason. So maybe something has to warm up there at the repeater site. I don't know exactly what's causing any of this, but hopefully we'll figure it out. But we'll give Bob an opportunity to do what he needs to do, and we'll ask anyone else out there if they have any questions or topics tonight. If they'd like to go first before Bob, just give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, all I'm getting is noise here. I'm trying to look at it on two different radios simultaneously. And one has the added advantage of it, it has the ability to kind of tone squelch. The other one, not so well. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. And if you have any questions or topics of a technical nature that you would like to discuss, please give me your call sign and your first name. Okay, Bob, if you're still with us, I guess we'll go to your question first and hope the repeater and or the radios or something that's causing this problem goes away. So, Bob, if you're out there, what's your question for tonight?
This is KD2NBP. I am now at full power, 50 watts. Normally I get through just fine on 5 watts. So, hope you hear me. My question is actually not a radio question, but it is a technical question, a computer question. Maybe you can help me, or maybe someone can help me, maybe not. I'm trying to be able to record a Zoom meeting. In this case, I want to do a Zoom meeting, sound and video. And a bunch of recorders say they can do that from screen capture recorders. I've tried two, and all I get is like, I'll get video with no sound, and when I do YouTube videos, I'll get a strange thing. I'll get the sound, but the video will like move for about 2 seconds, and then it freezes, yet the sound keeps going on playback, I'm talking about. I don't know much about video technology. I don't know about frame rates and all this other business. There are always parameters you can set. Anyway, it's very strange. And when these both of these programs also have you could also just go audio record only. And when you do that, it's fine. And so, anyway, that's my question. Maybe you can help me, maybe you can't. Maybe you know a video recorder that works well, easy to use, whatever. I'm trying to figure this out. Back to net.
Bob, let me just, I don't know, very strange things happening tonight with this. But anyway. I got some of that. I didn't get exactly all of it. What I was, I think you were saying was you're using Zoom as a teleconferencing program, and you would like to be able to record it to have a copy. So you want to record both the audio and the video, and there seems to be some problem in doing that. I'm not terribly familiar with Zoom by itself. I was wondering if it has the built-in capacity to do the video and audio recording, or it's left to the user to find another piece of software.
I can't answer that.
Your answer. My cable problem, I should switch to the other cable. I keep using this one because it only happens once in a while, and it's a long one to get me into my bedroom when I do that. Do you hear me now?
OBE checking into that.
Fortunately, I have a real kludge setup. I have basically two different radios on two different antennas, and my 7100, which I usually use, is having a lot of problems with background noise. But for whatever reason, my FDM 400 is selecting out for. So I'm listening with one, I'm transmitting with another. It's an interesting exercise. There's a gentleman who said that he could help if he wants to give you a good explanation, and then we can toss it around. That would be okay.
Checking in.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
This is WF2N. I believe that was N2OBE trying to break in there.
OBE, just check it into the net.
Okay, NTOBE, thanks for checking in. Do you have any questions?
At this time, I just tuned in and I'm just listening. Over.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks for checking in. Roy, I'll toss it back to you. NTOBE has no comments right now.
Okay, very good. I guess I misunderstood. I thought someone wanted to offer some help in this matter. Once again, if there's someone other than N2OBE that came on the repeater and suggested that they could answer that question, I'll let the microphone drop for a couple of seconds and see if someone replies. I guess not. So getting back to you, Bob, my understanding once again was that you're using Zoom. There is no internal way of successfully recording video, and you would like some suggestions on software that might be able to serve that purpose? Is that what the question is?
Be here. Yeah, or what I might be doing wrong. There might be a setting I have to change or something. And you mentioned something about Zoom being able to record on its own. It can, but only if you are the person who started the meeting. Like, otherwise it'll click this thing. You must have permission. And the specific thing I'm doing is, it's a jazz workshop, and you can see this guy playing the piano. And Barry Harris is a great jazz musician. He's 90, he's still doing this. Anyway, those are details. But the point is, I want to record it so I could learn all this doing by playing it back. So, but yeah, you can't do it in Zoom if you're not the person who started the meeting.
I guess that unfortunately makes sense. There's a lot of web-based teleconferencing software that gives more power to the host than to the other clients, and it requires a lot of overhead. A lot of times they view that at the central server, so if they were making multiple copies, although you would think that all they have to do is just have one copy and just have downloadable links. But there are all kinds of snap capturing third party software out there. There's Camtasia. I think that's able to do video and audio capture. You might be able to get it for a trial basis. I don't know how badly they cripple the trial version. But basically what you're looking for is some application that instead of just take snapshots of your page, that just captures the audio output and the video output of either a window or a screen. So I would look into Camtasia, and if for whatever reason it doesn't suit you, probably you could come up with parallel listings for other thirdware software that accomplishes something like that.
To NVP. Roy, how do you spell that Camtasia?
Camtasia.
Is it T as in Tom or P as in Paul?
Charlie Alpha is Mike Tango Alpha Sierra India Alpha.
Forgot it. I will try that, but I've already downloaded two things and they officially can do this, you know. But I can't get it to work. So I'll try Camtasia. Maybe Camtasia will work. And I've pulled up a whole lot of others. I've only tried two so far. Actually, one I paid for. I can't get it to work. I paid $40, but they do say you have 30 days, you could get a refund. So if I can't get it to work, that's what I'll do. So I will try Camtasia. And if anyone else has other suggestions, I'll take those too. But I will just be trying a whole bunch of others. Thanks, Roy. And maybe someone else some more info. Back to Ned.
Very good, Bob. So once again, if anyone else has had experience recording video and audio on their computer and they have another application that they think does it better or cheaper, please feel free to hit that push-to-talk button.
Charlie 2, Zulu Victor, checking in.
Hello, William.
I've been playing with recording the stuff off of the computer, and nothing seems to work any good at all, except just direct cell phone rescan, and so that does work, and then you have it with you immediately, and you can look at it in the next 5 minutes with no playing around. So that's my quick advice for the cheapest, quickest solution. Back to net control.
William, but I'm a little confused. It sounds like it's an application on your cell phone. So is this working in parallel with a Zoom-like program on the cell phone, same cell phone, or are you just pointing the cell phone at your screen and recording it live?
Yeah, this is a simple thing where I'm putting the Zoom on the screen and pretty big as possible so you get the right thing. And then you just get a selfie stick or something to hold the camera steady and just turn it on in a rescan situation. And that works. But it's the cheap way out, so it's probably not professional.
Okay, very good. Thank you, William, for that suggestion. Yeah, it's the quick and dirty approach, but sometimes that's all that you need. So you have two suggestions, Bob. Either a separate recorder just pointed at the screen with the audio, or something like Camtasia or some other third-party audio-video capture software that runs in the background. Anyone else with any ideas on this subject, please hit the push-to-talk button. Okay, I guess no one has any better ideas. Does anyone else have any questions tonight? Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this lovely little episode of the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net that meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. And we're here to hopefully help people with questions that they have about ham radio, but we try and answer any kind of question you might come up with. If we don't know it, we ask among the other participants. So if anyone has any questions out there, please hit that push-to-talk button, give us your first name and your call sign.
Charlie 2, Zulu Victor, I got another comment. I have a Pro Recorder, which is takes an HDMI output directly from the any output source, and then records that, as video and audio in high quality. And I also have another laptop that I can basically tune into Zoom and go full screen and take the HDMI output out of that laptop and dump it into the Pro Recorder and make a recording like that. But that's a whole lot to go through. It ties up a lot of equipment, and then when you're done, you have to play around moving the file back and forth, because really, I'm not really sure where you want to view it at, but maybe a long-term archive would be better to get something like that. But this setup is $5,000.
William, yeah, I was going to point out that the hardware would probably be the biggest impediment beyond the simple moving around files. So, that's a lot of money for something like that. Once again, it might not be, done in Technicolor. But Camtasia is going to cost a lot less than $5,000, I am sure. And there are other capturing softwares out there that are designed, because, you know, we're not the first people to kind of scratch our head and ask that question. So I'm sure that Bob will be able to either do it the quick gorilla way that you mentioned earlier, or either with Camtasia or a similar video audio capture utility, get the same you know, results. But thanks for that one. $5,000, gosh.
$5,000 is two laptops and the infrastructure to hook it all together with HDMI and another monitor and stuff. So, you know, that's, but I have all the equipment sitting around, just like you guys have all those ham radios sitting around. So, for me, I just connect it up.
Whatever works for you. I have Camtasia loaded in my computer. I just hit a button and said a couple of things, and it's doing it for me. So, you know, whatever works for anyone. You know, we all have a different collection of things in our shack. Some people have computers, some people just have radios, and you know, you gotta figure out how to get it to do what you want with the equipment that you have. Because amateur radio operators, you know, generally want to save their money so that they can afford either a better antenna or a better radio.
Copy that. I do have a technical question when you get around to asking for more of those.
Very good, William. I would assume that we're ready for your question for tonight.
My question is, I have this antenna here that I can't figure out how to get outside, and it's sitting on a piece of wood, and it's not necessarily on a ground plane. And even if I get it outside and get on the top of this air conditioner, the air conditioner surface is not going to be very big. It's only going to be like 20 inches by 20 inches. And I have to be able to open the window, so it's got to go on the corner of a box. If I don't even know that's metal, it might be aluminum. So I'm wondering if it's going to be any better to try getting it out the window or just leaving it alone.
Hey, William, a couple of things. The type of antenna that it is it a vertical ground plane? Is it just a vertical quarter wave? So one important thing is what kind of antenna, and equally important is what frequency range you're planning to use it on.
The dual band antenna that we're talking over right now, it's a 5/8, you know, monopole kind of bottom-fed antenna with two loading coils in the middle of it. And, you know, so it's, you know, just a regular ham radio antenna with a down lead and a UHF connector at the bottom with a mag mount. And so I presume it will work better if I get a piece of steel or something to stick it on rather than this piece of wood. But I was just wondering how much I'm losing.
Now, I don't know how much you're losing, but I would assume, as you've mentioned, that you're losing a significant amount. A 5/8 wave, if you're telling me that it's 5/8 wave, requires a ground plane. Without a ground plane, its nominal impedance is not going to be close to 50 ohms, so you're going to have a visual mismatch, which is going to cause reflections and cause a diminished efficiency of your transmission of your radiated power. So I would strongly advise that you know, it doesn't have to be particularly amazing. You can get an extra large a cookie sheet, as long as it's metal. Now, if you want to get the benefit of the magnetic mount, you need a ferrous material that will attract the magnetic mount. Theoretically, if you're just able to kind of supply some external pressure to press the base right next to a large amount of flat metal, the capacitive coupling that it's designed to use to as the ground plane will be sufficient. You were mentioning about it only being 20 inches. Well, you know, I mean, having a smaller than optimal ground plane is better than having none at all. So I would try what you have available as opposed to the piece of wood, which is definitely not operating as a ground plane.
I agree with that. The antenna itself is a 58-inch antenna, but I've only got 20 inches of air conditioner shield sticking out. But I think I'm heartened by the idea that it's capacitively coupled, so even if the shield is actually aluminum, if I can get it to stay out there, it should do something more than what it's doing now.
I would agree. I mean, aluminum is not the greatest conductor of electricity. You know, we all know copper. But, you know, I mean, iron isn't that great either. So the only additional benefit to have it stuck onto some, you know, ferrous material is just that you do not have the secondary annoyance of coming up with something to strap it down. Because you want the capacitive, the dielectric base of the magnetic mount to be tight with the surface of the metal that you're going to be using. But as long as you're able to glue it or clamp it down and have it about the same distance between that you would have if it was ferrous material, you really shouldn't have any more problems. I mean, in a perfect world, the larger the ground plane is, usually the better, but certainly, as I said before, any ground plane is better than no ground plane.
So, let's say I got a cookie sheet or something that was about 20 by 12 or 14 and was able to stick this to the cookie sheet and then stick that to the air conditioner so that it would be providing more ground plane, you know, to the than it would be just sitting on the corner of the air conditioner. Do you think that adding, another 20 inches of by 14 inches of ground plane would be helpful at all in terms of, better performance?
Yes, I think it would, William. I think, it might not be an incredible difference, but I think it would be at least a marginal improvement. As long as you didn't have a problem mechanically keeping everything connected to everything else.
Yeah, a couple of tech screws, and if this thing is magnetic in the aluminum housing, I think it'll just solve that. But I just want to try to keep as stealth as possible because it's on the street side. But if you think a little more would be better, because one side would have it, and the other side would be open air, so...
In a perfect universe, it's good to put the ground plane magnetic mount antenna in the center of your ground plane, because if you place it towards one edge, the propagation will change from being omnidirectional to in the direction of the biggest amount of the surface of the ground plane. So you might have a directionality that you prefer it that way. You know, some people don't really want an omnidirectional antenna. They want one with a little directionality. So it really depends upon the stations that you tend to use and your geographic location and such. But in a perfect world, you try and put it in the middle, because that way it's all omnidirectional and you don't have to worry about the difficulty of reaching a repeater that's on your north side versus your south or your east.
Another issue is I do have pretty good shielding because it's street side and the face of the building is aluminum, siding. And that's a reflective surface. So I'm hoping I can get at least a quarter wavelength away from the building. I'm not exactly sure how much distance I got, but I think the metal building will affect it as well as the orientation of the street, because I'm not up on the top. I don't have a roof clear 360 view. I only really have 180 view towards New Jersey and Manhattan, best case.
Yeah, most likely the aluminum siding is going to have an effect. And even if you get it a half a wavelength away, it'll probably still have some effect. In some people's cases, I have seen them actually use these obstacles as advantages. They actually learned how to point their somewhat directional antennas at it in just an angle where it reflects back and gives a nice signal, you know, behind it, if you will. So it's going to be a problem. Aluminum siding is not a very good thing for a radiating or receiving antenna. It's going to block you somewhat. But, you know, if that's all you got, then you try and deal with it.
I really think it's probably better outside because I'm blasting through, you know, 6 inches of brick and cinder block and the aluminum siding to get outside from here anyway. So if it was already outside, that would probably be an advantage to begin with.
Yes, William. Outside is almost always better than inside. Outside is it has less obstructions. You might have to deal with the obstruction on one side where your aluminum siding is on the outside of your wall, but the other three directions should be somewhat clearer, whereas if you do it in your apartment that's covered with aluminum siding, you basically are trying to work out of a Faraday cage, maybe with a little opening in it where your window is.
Window's about, you know, 24 by 24, and it's on the top portion of the antenna. How it gets the repeater, I don't know, but it's a big project for me to figure out how to do that.
Now, if it works for you, it works for you, that's fine. But all things being equal, if I ever had the option and choice between an outside antenna and an inside antenna, I would definitely go with the outside version. In a perfect universe, again, we do not live in a perfect universe, the important factor for UHF and VHF is elevation. So if you were able to raise it up to a high point, you could get easily 20 to 30 decibel gain on your receive and transmit. I once tried to game the laws of physics by just buying a linear amplifier and keeping my ground plane low, and it didn't work out at all. So physics doesn't like to be toyed with. But I realize that you just can't get the elevation, but at the very least, if you can manage the move to the outside, and even if you use the air conditioner, or if you use just the cookie pan, and that alone, it probably would give you a better signal output.
Okay, I'm gonna give that a try and see if I can find out what we can give up. I might have to buy maybe a pizza pie would be better because that would be a round situation. But to see what I can get that'll get out the window and fit and work. So maybe in a month or so, I'll check in and let you know how it went.
William, I would appreciate you coming back and giving us a report on how everything worked out. As far as the geometry of the ground plane, it probably is not that important that it not be circular. Obviously, most ground planes, especially verticals that are planted on the ground with something like 36 radials. It's a rather circular shield that is really made up of the wire. You know, just as long as it's vaguely symmetrical is all that's really necessary. Having right angles doesn't really impact it as far as I'm aware.
Okay. Well, back to you at Net Control. Thanks very much for all the tips. Looking forward to being able to get a bit more DX out of the system.
Okay, very good, William. I wish you good luck with that. Once again, I am Roy, AC2GS, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, meeting every second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 9 p.m. And we do have a TechNet puzzle out there, so I'm hoping that people are going to look at the web page. You can either go to the front page of www.kc2rc.com and then find where the puzzle is and click that. Or if you don't want to, you could just type into your browser the word puzzle.kc2rc.com, and that'll take you to the puzzle. But before we get to the puzzle, once again, if anyone has any questions of a technical nature or topics they would like to discuss or be discussed or have a conversation about, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Max, ACQZW.
Could you bring up your mic gain a bit? You're very, very quiet.
Max, ACQZW.
Anyone else can recognize what he's saying? Unfortunately, like I said, I'm basically operating between two different radios, and his level just is coming out very low. So if someone can relay, I would appreciate.
Max. This is WF2N. I have zero copy. I didn't even hear the repeater key up. It never broke squelch on this end.
Let's try this one more time. Unfortunately, I have to really raise the volume, which is going to cause oscillations and such. But I will give it a try. So I will turn the volume all the way up, and the gentleman that we can't quite make out, I will ask him to again repeat his call sign.
Alpha Charlie 2, Zulu Whiskey.
C2ZW, welcome aboard. I don't know what to tell you, though. Your audio is very, very, very low. My surmise is that the mic gain is set a little too low, or there's something wonky going on with the microphone. You know, it's a condenser that's not getting the power that it needs, or for some odd reason, there's very little audio coming out of that.
It's the first time I tried the headset of my radio, so I think it's not configured correctly.
Okay, well, I don't know if you want to try a different microphone or you just want to give us your question or your topic. It's up to you. That signal's very noisy, so I couldn't even make out what you were saying. Maxime, I'm assuming you're looking for another microphone, so we'll give you a little bit of time with that. Anyone else with any questions or topics or comments for the TechNet tonight?
KD2MVP with a quick comment.
Bob.
Just like Jason, the station that you're hearing faintly, I'm hearing absolutely nothing. It just doesn't seem like anybody's even trying to come on or anything. It's strange. So it seems like you're hearing it better than at least a couple of us out here. I just want to, maybe that'll help you with what's going on. Back to Ned.
Hey, thanks for that. I got to kind of sit down and think about why I'm getting a lot of noise on everyone's reception on my 7100. And I'm getting decent audio from the FTM 400, although with Maxime, his audio level is probably about 12 decibels lower than it really should be. So that's probably why he's just getting lost in the noise and such for other people.
Into Zulu Victor.
Victor, do you wanted to say something?
I was listening during that time. I pushed the button to kill all the squelch, and I just got full noise the whole time. I was trying to listen to him. So you must be getting him direct rather than through the repeater.
That's an interesting one. Maybe he's transmitting on the repeater's output instead of the repeater's input, you're thinking?
Get good signal off the repeater, and I'm getting nothing when you're hearing him at all.
That's an interesting theory. I got to think about that for a while. Maxime, in case you figured out what's going on with you and you want to give it another try, please take this as an opportunity.
I don't know if you can hear me better now.
little bit louder now. You've gone up maybe about 2-3 decibels. It's still kind of on the quiet side, but it's a little bit better than last time.
So, I do have a question. I don't know if you can hear it clear. So, I'm looking for circuit simulation software, especially for radio circuits. Do you have any recommendation about that?
Unfortunately, your audio is a little bit louder, but so unfortunately is the background noise. That's because you're not full quieting, and I can't quite make it out. And I'll kind of ask the other people listening. I'm not terribly optimistic, but does anyone able to receive Maxime's signal better than me?
WF2N, still not hearing anything at all. Over.
Same here.
Okay, Maxime, I really think that you are transmitting on the output, not the input. I say that because not only do I have two radios on, I have three radios on. And I'm seeing the signal strength that you're putting out is not the same as the one that I'm getting from the repeater. Your signal on 146.730 is many decibels lower than everyone else's when they're going through the repeater. So I think, as I think it was William suggested, for some reason you have your radio set up to directly transmit to the output frequency instead of the input frequency. So you're going around the repeater, if you will. For the time being, let's move on to the puzzle, and after the puzzle, we'll go back and see if Maxime has figured out what's gone wrong tonight. There's a, you know, it's a very simple question. It doesn't even require looking at pretty pictures. The question basically is a transmission line terminated by its own characteristic impedance. And then you have four choices. The choices are, it needs no balun, that's A. B is, it appears to be infinitely long. C is, it radiates evenly along its entire length. And D is, has a very high standing wave ratio. So would anyone like to play the puzzle for tonight?
AC2ZV, I'll let somebody else go first.
Okay, does anyone else want to go first before William?
BP, I'll give it a shot.
Bob?
Redeem myself from last week. Well, if Tereva's characteristic impedance means what I think it does, it would be A, needs no balun. That's my guess or my answer.
You have to understand that balun serve a different... uses. It doesn't require a balun as a impedance transforming device, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't need a balun at all, because if you're going, say, from a balanced to an unbalanced, from a balanced antenna to an unbalanced transmission line, or a balanced terminator to an unbalanced transmission line. You might want to do a balun to use that as a transformer.
I can only guess C, but I thought they didn't behave that way, but I'll say C, and if it's not C, I'm just not even going to guess that anymore.
Hey, Bob. The problem with that is when it radiates evenly along its entire length, it's doing it because the transmission, the RF that's going to the terminator, is reflecting back down it. Because when it's going up to the terminator, it's in what's called differential mode. And differential mode, that's kind of the beauty of a transmission line, it's non-radiating. You wouldn't really want your transmission line to radiate. You would prefer the transmission line just to shove the power to the actual antenna where all the radiating is done. So what happens with if you have a 50 ohm, say, coaxial cable, and you have it connected to a load that's 50 ohms, all of that energy goes into that load, so it's not going to bounce back, and so it's not going to radiate.
Really flummoxed. I mean, I would have to say B, but with my record, I'm probably wrong again, but it has the highest of WR. Makes no sense to me. In fact, anyway, let's just say B and then I'll quit.
Well, I would agree with you with that, because as we all know, that when you are using a load that's the same impedance as the transmission line, in other words, if you have a 50-ohm coaxial cable and it's going into an antenna or any kind of load that's 50 ohms, it's going to have a one-to-one standing wave ratio. That's the whole idea of standing wave ratio. There's a whole bunch of different ways to define VSWRs and ISWRs and all kinds of things. But ultimately, you can define it by simply the difference between the transmission line and the impedance of the final load. So it would have a VSWR of one-to-one, which is not a high VSWR. So by the process of elimination, we are left with it that it appears to be infinitely long. And the way that I like to kind of think about it is that if you have a vector network analyzer, usually that's a fancy word for an antenna analyzer. I mean, the old ones from MFJ that had the little meters on them really were a different thing entirely. But if you have a modern-day antenna analyzer, it tends to really be a vector network analyzer. Very often, they have this extra little feature called a time delay reflectometer. The way that they work is they basically ping the wire. They send a signal down the transmission line of a very, very quick pulse, and then they sit there and they listen to see if that pulse reflects back to it. And by knowing the speed of the signal through the medium, it can tell you the length of the cable, whether there are any impedance mismatches to the cable. At the point, if you were to, say, short the end of the transmission line, so it would have a 0 ohm impedance, it would reflect back. If you had nothing connected to the end of the transmission line, so the load impedance would be effectively infinity ohms, you'd get the reflection going back. But if you had 50 ohms exactly as the load, it would absorb all of the energy, which is why we always want to have impedance matching. That maximizes the energy transfer. And as far as the reflectometer, you have an infinite long piece of wire. So the answer is B. William, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree, but I also have a comment, because in the past I used some Radiax, which is a coaxial cable which is designed to leak. It's made by Andrew Corporation, you know, for tunnels and stuff like that. And the proper installation of the Radiax actually requires a termination on the end, so the transmission line is correct. But it also allows the signal to leak out throughout the entire length of the coax. So it's actually better for the transmitter than flipping all the energy back. But I guess all the little holes all along the Radiax let the RF down, and people are able to hear you know, radio in their cars and stuff when they go through tunnels. So, you know, C is probably a consolation prize answer.
Yep, I'll give you a consolation prize. The only thing that I would say is, although Radiax are fascinating things, they're not really the theoretical concept of a perfect transmission line. They're designed specifically to be leaky, so that they act as a partial transmitter. They have their shields regularly damaged, if you will, so that their shields don't isolate and hold the differential mode. So so that the signal will leak out along the length of it. And it's a good design for something like an underground transmission system where you just run the transmission line. It's not, again, not really that much of a transmission line as it is a kind of intriguing way of spreading out your radiating antenna.
I think it is a novel concept. Well, I have a question though. When I'm in the subway, I look at the antennas down there, and there's usually three in a row, and they're minus signs, and they're not oriented directly. So I'm wondering if this is some kind of phased array that squirts back and forth inside the subway station. If you can actually see that as being a ham radio, as what's really going on.
An interesting one. It's sort of a shame that we don't have Andy WA2CDL listening to us. He still hasn't kind of put up his long distance antennas. He's in Nassau County, and he used to work for the subway, so he probably knows exactly what it is. My guess would be that it is some kind of phase delay beam steering type of system. Because just the way that you describe it, but I will ask Andy if about that, and either cajole him to put up his antenna and come on the technical net, and if not, I'll just relay his answer. But that's a good point, William.
How they do that, and I have also noticed that in some ends of the train, you don't get the signal until you leave the station, so the beam must be concentrated more towards the middle of the station. If you drive in the middle cars, you're better off than in the end cars.
You can't really, you know, beam directing is nice, but you have to also realize that it's dealing with multiple receiver transmitters, and you can't have them simultaneously optimized. So that's probably the default location is in the center of the station.
Miracle that everybody can, you know, like get shots of data when the train rolls in, and you get refreshed. You get your 150 bytes or whatever it is for your web page, and then boom, you're back to nothing. But there's a whole trainload of people. I think a train would hold over.
Underground, much experience with them, but the new wireless modes are getting better and better and better. Recently, I haven't seen any actual production models of the chipset, but they're going to have improved features. A lot of the multi-channel aspects and MIMO aspects of the present wireless access points are kind of one-directional at a time. I think the new standard allows for bi-directional applications on multi-channels. So that should be fun.
5G, and they have this massive MIMO, which basically starts to resemble Tesla's tower out in Windermere. Lots of little antennas sticking around all over the outside of a big thing.
Actually, there's some guys down in Texas. I think the company is sometimes known as Texon, other times known as Visiv, which is not a great name for anything. They actually built a Tesla tower down in Texas.
Hear about that. All I've heard about are these musicians that have two Tesla coils that they've hooked up to microprocessors, and they play music at events.
I've seen those guys, not in person. I've seen a lot of YouTubes. They take a lot of YouTube videos, and they're available, and it's fascinating. It strikes me as a very dangerous form of entertainment, but, you know, whatever floats one's boat.
The suit that goes out there in the middle and gets zapped up, he is incredible, and they allow people to get a little cage, and they all get zapped up. You know, I I think that's amazing that these people got those videos out on YouTube.
Indeed. Tesla coils are fun little things. You can buy a knockoff Chinese Tesla coil on Amazon with a MIDI and an audio interface, and it'll play music, not terribly good, but it'll play music. And I never actually got one of those. I have a lot of plasma balls, if you're familiar with, basically they're just globes with rare gases in them and a small RF generator that produces very local RF. And I have a Wilmhurst machine that produces static electricity, but I don't have any Tesla generators.
I have one of those, I had an 8-inch plasma sphere that I really have enjoyed over the years. It's audio responsive and has a little dial. You can turn up and down the RF so you get different types of patterns out of the beam. But I'm looking for other things like that, and I haven't found anything else.
They come in all sizes. I have one sitting on my desk here that's, I think, about 3 inches. I've had them in my living room. I have 12 inches. They also, somewhat the same companies, sort of produce these flat versions that are basically little rare gas balls, and the back screen generates the RF, and so the pattern lights up through the little glass balls. I don't know if you've ever seen those gizmos.
What is their call?
I think they're called Lumen Glass.
Mine is just a sphere of glass. It looks like it's got some steel wool hooked to it. Coated with some kind of invisible conductive coating that brings the circuit around, but it's a very interesting device. It's probably evacuated pretty strong too.
Totally evacuated because it has to ionize gas. So there's inert gases pumped into it, and probably my guess would be it's using something like tin indium. Because it's relatively transparent, so they can coat the outside and it's conductive, but you can still see through it.
Yeah, mine actually came unglued and I had to glue it back together again. I was surprised it was just a simple little circuit with some wires and stuff like that inside. It's amazing that it works, and that Tesla discovered how that turns out.
I have seen a lot of times you can, a lot of them you can actually pop the globe. They're completely separate. What happens is the globe is self-contained and evacuated and has the gas in it, and then has a little envelope that the an external RF antenna goes into that surroundings and operates to excite the gases. So you have the base with that's the step-up power circuit and an RF transmitter, and the other portion is the enclosed globe. You know, sometimes they put them together because it's cheaper to manufacture, and sometimes they just manufacture them as separate parts and they can come apart.
Mine is a glass blower's art because the center tube is basically glass, and it's adhered with glass to the outer tube. And there was a little nipple on the end where you can see that that's where they put the gas in and then cut it off with a flame. So, you know, mine is like a one piece, but I would think you could make two pieces and just sort of stick it together with some kind of tar or something. But I don't think that would last over time.
But it depends upon how it's designed. There was a guy, YouTube, it's always YouTube, who decided that these things are not powerful enough for him. So he basically pulled off the self-contained globe and started to build much more powerful RF transmitters that would fit inside the base of it. And he pumped so much power into that gas, he ionized it so much that thermal shock broke all of the globes eventually. He just kept on cranking it up more and more and more until it got semi-ridiculous, and the sparks were flying between separate globes.
He would be doing that in his workshop over there in the city back in the day, because he made all these weird light bulbs, which just basically had one element in the bottom, and, you know, his situation was he was into this radiant power, and he had like 50 kilohertz, in wires going around a room. I would think that it would create a lot of radio interference in these days, and wouldn't be allowed to do that.
I would agree. I mean, he did it at a time where not many people were interested in radio. It wasn't really the commercial extraordinary thing that it is today. But, you know, I mean, that was kind of why spark gap transmitters were acceptable, even though they just spewed RF across the spectrum. No one in their right mind would approve a spark gap transmitter today, because it would just wreck all the RF transmissions within a certain, mile of distances.
Thing is that with a spark gap transmitter, you could have a receiver that wasn't really tuned into the transmit frequency, and you'd still get plenty of energy out of it.
But that wasn't a feature. If you want to call it a feature, that was a problem. That was before almost anything. This was before the DeForest Audion tube. So there was no amplification, so what they used to detect the spark gap transmissions were things they called an inhera, which was basically just some iron filings that if you hooked them up to an antenna, they would get magnetized and stick together. One wonders how people really got much enjoyment out of it, but, you know, if you don't know any better, then it's a whiz-bang thing to do. It was very broad spectrum. The only way that you can select in the slightest for a frequency was the cutting of the antenna. To a degree, that's why we still to this day tend to talk about these things as 20 meters, 40 meters, 80 meters, because it was more related to the length of the antenna that you were using. There were no tuned circuits in a spark gap transmitter.
With you there, because I've looked at a few of those, and the spark gap is basically the exciter, and granted it's broadband, but you don't really get the real power out of it until it goes into a tuned circuit. And then when Tesla made his Super Droop one, he basically had the first tuned circuit then couple into the second tuned circuit, and that was his magnetron amplifier or something like that. But by taking the first spark gap with a tuned circuit, then he could get a certain frequency in that tuned circuit, and then he would do a transformer coupling into the higher coil, and that would get him a lot more energy out of it. So, I mean, he had Westinghouse generators running, at 50,000 cycles a second, so to push this stuff out.
I would love to see pictures of all that. I probably would not want to be anywhere near there. There was probably all kinds of health hazards. I'm told that spark gap transmitters were noisy as heck, and that there was a significant amount of ozone generated by them. And ozone is not a healthy thing to breathe in too much of.
A nice installation up on Cape Cod and the Marconi Tower up in the park. And if you're up there, you it's a nice little walk, and you can look at the seashore and see where the tower was, where they got the radio communications, and they have a little thing that shows how the spark gap transmitter was working for the transatlantic Marconi system.
That sounds interesting. I wonder if there are any YouTube tours of that. Press. My name is Roy, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they would like to discuss, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Charlie 2 Alpha Echo. What's going on there, Roy? Just checking in and listening tonight.
Hey, Joe, glad to have you aboard. I don't know, things are a little bit wonky here. I think one of our members is transmitting on the output instead of the input. And for some strange reason, my 7100 is having problems picking up the repeater. It's really, really noisy, so I'm not quite sure what's going on. I've taken to basically transmitting on the 7100, listening on the FTM 400, and looking at the waveforms on the Flex.
Is there something wrong with the repeater's transmission? Is that what's going on?
Oh, I'm trying to figure it out as I simultaneously run this net. For whatever reason, that's interesting. Anyway, probably not. It's probably just a confluence of errors. One person has their machine set someplace else.
Okay. Very good. All right. All right, I guess you'll figure it out.
AC2AE, it's William, AC2ZV. How you doing?
Mr. William, how's it going, my friend?
It's going good. I just was wondering, you're Tesla guy. I was wondering if you saw the Marconi Center up there near Wellesley.
Oh, I haven't had the opportunity to.
Well, hey, Roy, you can Google it. You just do Marconi Station, Wellfleet, and it comes up, and you see the park and some pictures and stuff like that. It's really not much left these days.
I'll have to check it out.
Where is it again, William? It's the Marconi Station, where?
Which is on Cape Cod, near... It's near Wellfleet. It's sort of is a bike trail that goes up and down. It's on the west side near the dunes.
Okay, that makes sense. Because didn't they do transatlantic? Was that the first place where they did the transatlantic transmission? I don't even know.
The first place was in Nova Scotia, but I think that was the first place in USA.
Very interesting.
Go. Great talking to you guys, and it's a great net tonight. Thanks a lot, Roy and Joe. I'll check out now. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Hey, William. Have a good rest of the Sunday, rest of Wednesday, and have a good week. And hopefully, we'll talk again soon.
Over to it. Maybe I'll get my antenna outside soon. Over and out. Bye.
Very good. Once again, I am AC2GS, Roy, with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any technical questions or subjects tonight, please feel free. Give me your first name or your call sign. Otherwise, we'll call it a night. Okay, the signal's much stronger into the repeater. The mic gain is still very, 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 very low.
Can you tell me the signal?
Oh, I'm not really hearing you much. I'll ask once again, anyone out there who's listening, if they can relay Maxime's AC2ZW's message, please do.
And I barely hear it. If he wants to retransmit, I'll see if I can copy.
I'm going to see if I can relay.
Seem, we have a few people listening in, so you want to try again, and if I can't hear you, maybe they can.
I've got him full scale over here. I've got him full scale. He said, can you hear him now?
Well, for whatever reason, I can.
Consistently strange. All right, okay, I'm on the reverse right now, so I'm just coming direct. I'm not coming through the repeater itself. Maxim, if you could hear me, man, go with your message. I'll try and relay for you. Let me switch back on over. Okay, basically, Roy, the question he's asking is, he's looking for an electronic circuit simulator, and he was wondering if there was a specific one that you recommend.
A software simulator, because probably the go-to would be some variation of the program SPICE.
Maxim, I'm not sure if you can hear Roy. I'm assuming that you can hear Roy. Did you get all that? He's asking, Roy, do you have any experience with any of them?
Not a great deal. I use a generic one. I think it's DigiCircuit. It's a commercial company. I'll look it up in 1 second. And by the way, Joe, I'm deeply confused of where that signal is you're listening to, because I'm looking at 146.730 and I'm not seeing any signals from there. So I'm a little confused of where Maxime might be transmitting and you're receiving him.
Very curious, because he is hitting me full scale without a problem. He should, if he's hitting me full scale, he should be at least getting you. I mean, maybe his signal's just being blocked by a building. I don't know. But Maxim, you did hear him, right? He was talking about a program called DigiCircuit, and I'm trying to look up the SPICE simulator right now. But that actually looks like a nice little piece of software to have.
I don't really use them much. SPICE is sort of the go-to program that everyone talks about. There's about four or five different flavors. Some of them are kind of crude and free, I think. Others are much nicer, and you can get a trial basis for them. But it's kind of a steep learning curve. I've played around with them. And there are YouTubes that can help you. So that's at least what I could suggest as far as software simulated electronic circuits.
Question: how much do these usually run, the software simulators? the circuit simulators.
Probably too much. That's why I tend to stay with the trials that they offer. And you know, I guess if you really need it, usually these trials give you a certain amount of time to play with them, and then they downgrade them so that they only work for a relatively small, you know, 10 transistor or you know, 15 component circuits. I've never really used them that much, so I've never had to pay, but they probably are have a cost of something based on business use, not on consumer use.
Very good, very good. All right, Maxim, do you have any other questions for Roy? That's all. Thank you very much.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Maxime. Thank you, Joe. I tell you truthfully, I don't have the faintest idea what's going on, because I see your signal into the input. I see your signal into the output. I see my signal into the input and output, but when Maxime is talking, I don't know what signal you're hearing him from. It would be an interesting thing to figure that out.
The reverse, so I'm listening to him on 146.130. The only thing I've got the tone squelch on, but that shouldn't make any difference at all. I really don't know, man.
You be with a comment.
Comment.
Actually, this is silly. I don't even remember how to do reverse on my radio, so I just went to VFO mode and punched in 146.130, and I hear Joe on that frequency as well as the repeater frequency. He's actually louder on the 130 frequency, but Maxine, I don't hear him at all on that frequency. Very funny.
The mystery continues. I wonder if we'll ever figure it out. Yeah, I mean, I can see Bob on 130. I can see Joe on 130. For whatever reason, I don't really see Maxime on 130.
The because I'm not within range of Maxine and Joe is. I don't know.
Looking right now on QRZ, he's actually... His signal's got to pass you before it gets to me. So you know what? That building across the street from you might be what's really doing the damage.
I don't know. It strikes me as very weird. If it comes booming into you and I can't even see him on my pan adapter, that's a real attenuation of that signal.
I mean, yeah, that is still weird, man. Maxim, what kind of equipment are you using? Oh, all right. And what's your power level? Because your signal just dropped a lot. Your signal went to like about maybe like a 5 or a 6, and just a little bit ago, you were hitting me full scale. And I'm just about to check to see if there's any propagation going on tonight. But, oh yeah, it's lit up, man. It's lit up tonight. All right. That could be some of it. Oh, you're on one of them Chinese radios? You're on a handheld? You're using only 5 watts? Aha! That's it, man. That's it. One of those buildings at that level, yeah, it is definitely probably what's blocking your signal. My antenna just happens to be really high, and I guess I'm coming over that, I guess I'm making the line of sight to you, is why I got you so good. All right, let me switch back. Hold on. Heard that. He's using an HT, one of the Chinese radio HTs, in his apartment, and he's only using about 5 watts.
Very good. Yeah, I finally was able to trace him down. He has a signal that's about -97 dBm. My noise floor is about 101 dBm. So he's barely above the noise floor here.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, at least we know now. All right, guys, I'm sorry, man. I got to jump out of here for a little bit. But, Roy, thanks for the net, man. And it's always good to stop on by here. And, Maxim, you have a good night. Bob, have a good night. William, have a good night. And whoever else that I don't know is out here, have a great night, man. AC2, AE. I'll be clear on your final.
Okay, very good, Joe. Have a good night. Have a good rest of the week. And hopefully we'll chat again for the 10-meter net this coming Sunday.
We'll be there. AC2, AE. Have a good night, everyone.
Okay, once again, I am AC2GS, and my name is Roy. I am net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net that meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. If anyone has any further questions, comments, statements, topics, or what have you, please let me know. Otherwise, we'll call it a night here.
QNVB with a quick question.
Bob.
The RTFM to find this out, but you're here and you have the same radio. How do you reverse on an ICOM 7100, like the easy way to switch to, in this case, go from .730 to .130.
A great question to answer. Unfortunately, I haven't done it in so long that I don't remember. And if I recall correctly, most of the time that I did it in the past, I did it through software and the RSA B1, whatever it's called, software, I think, has an actual button that just flips those.
I thought the radio had that somewhere, either on the radio or in the touch screen somewhere, but I'll have to look it up. Thanks, I had to just clued you through the DFO mode.
I mean, I'm actually, my primary UHF VHF radio used to be my Flex. I kind of moved over to the 7100 simply because it actually is able to both record my received signal and transmission signal without the hassle of the Flex that I have to merge two channels together. So I'm in a bit of transition, but I'm sure it's available for a simple, quick Google.
Just look it up in my user's manual, which I have on my computer too, one way or the other. Is there a term for that? I mean, not reverse. What's the term for flipping? Maybe it is reverse.
Yeah, it's reverse.
I'll look it up. It's probably not too hard to do. Back to you, Roy. Thanks.
This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month. Our next meeting will be July 1st, which will be held by teleconferencing. Club members will be emailed with the details of logging in and into the meeting. Our regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter net club, club net on every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on this repeater, as well as a 10-meter net every Sunday at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 9 p.m. We have a weekly net featuring Yaesu's Fusion Digital Technology every Thursday at 9 p.m. on our club repeater. If you can communicate using Fusion Digital Technology, please join in. You can connect to our repeater while in Fusion Digital mode, either directly using a Fusion Digital Technology radio or via hotspot and other digital technology modes using our network gateway, such as our XLX server. We offer an audio stream of the FusionNet on the Internet, as well as all audio transmissions on our club repeater at stream.kc2rc.com. Members, as well as non-members, are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is available on our website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kc2rc.com or www.kingscountyradioclub.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. And as always, guys, these are still dangerous times out there. The coronavirus has not gone away. Matter of fact, there are some states where it's creeping up. So respect the danger, take proper precautions, don't panic, don't hide, but just act intelligently, and we'll all get through this. So, as the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. We're going to roll this all up and shut it down, but we'll be back to do it all over again June 24th, and you're all welcome to join us. As always, I want to thank all the people that participated tonight, and especially my co-host, Jason, WF2N. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, and I'll be going clear and getting the heck out of here. Until next time, guys, stay safe.
Matt Roy, thanks for having me on Whiskey Fox 2 November.